another episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. This will be a pretty quick one today. As always, I'm Tyler, joined by Matt. And today we just want to go over the end of the year awards that the conference released earlier today. Not too many controversies from us. A lot of the big awards went the way that we expected, but there's a few things that we really want to take issue with, starting with a few travesties that befell the Rams teams today.
Yeah, the A10 Twitter Awards, or A10 Awards on Twitter every year, there's a lot of pretty strong reactions from teams that feel their players got the short end of the stick. And yeah, as you said, I mean, there weren't too many big surprises. We'll go into some of the places we disagree. And there were a couple bad ones that we're mostly going to focus on. But that's always entertaining. I mean, I love fans sticking up for their own guys. And, you know, they can't always get them all right. Everyone wants their players to win. But overall, I mean, I feel like they did a pretty good job this year.
So four of the major awards are ones that we have frequently discussed on here and ones that we both agreed with. John Axel Goodmanson of Davidson is the Player of the Year. Obi Toppin of Dayton is the Rookie of the Year. Tavian Dunn-Martin of Duquesne is the Sixth Man of the Year. And Mike Rhodes of VCU is the Coach of the Year. Neither of us take any issue with any of these awards. We agree completely with them. One of the first controversial ones, Javon Betts of St. Louis wins Defensive Player of the Year. Now, I personally chose Isaac Van of VCU for this, but I had Betts as one of my many runners-up that I considered. You had Javon Betts as your Defensive Player of the Year. While he personally wouldn't have been my first pick, I have no issue with this. The first controversial award is the most improved player, which went to Justin Kyer of George Mason. I picked Rhode Island's Cyril Langevin. You took Dayton's Ryan Meixel.
Yeah, this was I don't think Justin Kyer, that wasn't a bad pick to me. He did have a very strong year, although he was pretty good last year, too, for Mason. So I'm not sure if he had quite as big of a jump as some of the other guys. My reasoning for Meixel, just his freshman and sophomore years, he's always been a good offensive player since he came to Dayton, but his defense just took a tremendous step forward. And that coupled with the fact that he came off a medical redshirt after he had two major hip surgeries, I thought that was just a great bounce back performance for him to return to the floor. And a couple other guys, you know, Marcus Santos Silva, I know his name was thrown around quite a bit. He would have been my second choice. And then Kyer also, though. I mean, I don't have a big issue with this one. I mean, Meixel, you know, it's a bit of a homer pick, too, for me. But Kyer, he had a great season. He ended up on the all-conference second team, too. So overall, it was just a very strong season for him.
We discussed this on a pod a few episodes ago, in which I came down to really three finalists, two of which go into the category of role player who blossomed into a star. That was Kyer and Langevin. And then Santos Silva fell into the category of end-of-the-bench guy who blossomed into a really, really top-notch role player. I would still put Kyer third. I just think that the jump for Langevin was more steep. He went from a guy who was pretty much just out there to be a big body, protect the rim, get rebounds, to the fact that he is now one of the best offensive threats in the conference. And then Santos Silva honestly probably took a bigger leap than either of those two players. I prefer Langevin just because of how good of a player he's become. Santos Silva still isn't quite a star, but he took a huge jump. And something that we'll talk about later when we go into the all-conference teams, for me, I dock Justin Kyer a little bit because he fell off in February. He was absolutely spectacular the first 3 weeks of conference play and was probably the favorite for Player of the Year at that point. But he faded down the stretch, and for me, I want to see consistency or see guys get stronger down the stretch like an Obi Toppin. So for me, I would have just gone with Langevin. Kyer was in consideration, but I do think that they made the wrong choice here. Langevin's been absolutely terrific this season. This was a guy that I really wasn't scared to see my team play against in the past few years. I figured he was out there just to get some rebounds and rack up fouls, and I'm now just absolutely terrified of seeing him on the other side of the court.
You know, that is a good point too. You talked about Kyer, how he probably was the favorite for A-10 player of the year about 6 or 7 games into the season, but he did drop off, wasn't quite as consistent. And it's tough to find a much more consistent player than Ciryl Langevin. If you go back to the third season of conference play, which coincidentally was against George Mason, he's only scored less than double figures one time in that span, so over 16 games. And he's also had multiple double-digit rebound performances thrown in there. He blocks a lot of shots. Just a steady presence for the Rams. And I mean, maybe part of it is he hasn't had a ton of huge games where he'll just dominate a game start to finish, and he didn't have any like 30-point games like his teammate Fats Russell did. So he's not maybe the flashiest player, but in terms of consistency, Langevin was about as good as it gets this year.
Yeah, and taking a look at some of the other big awards, a few controversies that we did see arise on Twitter. A fair amount of people picked Marcus Evans of VCU as their player of the year. That's a fine choice. I would have had him in the top four consideration. He wins the argument of best player on the best team, but I just think that John Axel has contributed more to Davidson's ability to win. And while Evans was a great closer for VCU, there were plenty of other guys that were the reasons why these games were close to give Evans a chance to close. Goodmanson just doesn't have quite the same level of role guys around him as Marcus Evans does. Some disgruntled Duquesne fans threw out Sincere Carey for Rookie of the Year. I love Sincere Carey as much as the next guy. But come on, if you watch the Duquesne Dayton game, either of them, the one from last weekend or the one from February, you can't possibly tell me that Obi Toppin wasn't the best player on the floor in both of those games. He's absolutely terrific. He played himself into player of the year conversation at the end of the season. He was an easy pick for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, that's one
Defense.
where I just want to say, like, that's one where I talk about guys, they always want their own players to win, and I understand that, but I think Obi was probably the easiest choice for Rookie of the Year. Even though this year there were more good freshmen in the conference than any year I can remember recently, so that does make it tough that, most years I think someone like Sincere Carey or Kyle Gofton, a lot of seasons they would have a good chance, but the competition was very tough for that award this year.
Yeah, and then lastly, for Defensive Player of the Year, a lot of people arguing that one of the VCU players should have won it. This is a difficult award to judge. We don't have great analytics for mid-major college basketball for this. The counting stats are limited. This is the kind of award that tends to be partially reputation-based. And so when you get down to the last two or three choices, a guy like Javon Bess, who has a reputation as an elite defender, may then have an advantage over someone like Marcus Evans or Isaac Van, who isn't quite thought about in the same vein. I have no problem with Bess winning Defensive Player of the Year, even though he wasn't my pick. This is the kind of award where I feel like in any given year, there's about five guys that could win it. And if any of those five guys get it, they're probably deserving.
Yeah, I think Bess, I think he was one of the favorites to win that award before the season, and he pretty much, I think he was as advertised. He was the leader of a very good Billikens defense for the most part. So yeah, no issue with that award at all. Although the VCU guys, I mean, I understand their defense was not just the best in the A-10, it was one of the best in the entire country. And maybe voters just thought that was more of a team defensive effort rather than one individual guy having the same impact as Bess. But overall, I mean, like you said, defense can be kind of tougher to measure than a lot of offensive statistics. So overall, I mean, I don't think you can complain too much about Javon Bess winning this award. He had a good year.
So then diving into the all-conference teams, the first team, player of the year, John Axel Goodmanson of Davidson, his teammate, Kellen Grady, rookie of the year, Obi Toppin of Dayton, Courtney Stockard of St. Bonaventure, and Marcus Evans of VCU. We end up with one senior in Stockard, a pair of juniors in Goodmanson and Evans, a sophomore in Grady, and a freshman in Toppin. a very diversified team that we have not had in years. Obi Toppin, the first freshman to make an All-A-10 first team since the great Lamar Odom was at Rhode Island for his lone season of college.
So overall for this one, for me, John Axel, well, so my own personal first team, I had John Axel Goodmanson, Marcus Evans, and Obi Toppin that matched the real team. And those were my three easier picks. I was pretty confident they would all make it. And then my last two, I had Charlie Brown from St. Joe's and Surreal Langevin from Rhode Island, and they both ended up making the second team, so I don't think they were huge snubs by any means. I personally would have preferred them over Stockard and Grady, but it was pretty close overall, so I don't think Stockard and Grady were necessarily bad picks at all.
Yeah, I had four easy picks on my team. Obviously Goodmanson, obviously Toppin, absolutely deserving of being the first rookie to make this team, and it's actually been 20 years exactly since Odom did so. I thought that Marcus Evans was really easy. I thought that Cyril Langevin was an easy pick for this. I had him actually as my number three guy. I slid him in right before Evans, although order doesn't really matter. I don't understand this. There's a little theory going around on Twitter that Langevin is being punished because his team wasn't good enough. That kind of makes sense if they had finished in the bottom four. I think you should absolutely punish a guy because his team finishes in 12th. But Rhodey's the 8 seed. I mean, they're a middle-of-the-pack team. This isn't some MVP award where winning really gets factored in. And if you really watched A-10 basketball, I don't understand how you can't see that Cyril Langevin was one of the five best players in this conference. His stats were terrific, putting up on the season 9.9 rebounds a game to lead the conference. He was up over 14 points a night. This despite the fact that Rhodey had absolutely no floor spacing. Their three-point shooting was an abomination for just about the entire season. He had no help on the offensive end until Fats Russell really kicked it up in the last three games. If he's not on this Rhode Island team, there's no question that they're playing in the Wednesday night pillow fight. They might be the 13th seed right now. He's the one who took them from being bad to mediocre. And I think this is one of the biggest screw-ups that they've had in years.
I mean, the simple fact is, though, like, this guy, I mean, you don't even need to look too deep into the stats. I mean, he was a few rebounds away from averaging a double-double. How often does that happen in the A-10? I mean, it's pretty rare at any level of college basketball. And, I mean, he was at 9.9 rebounds a game, by far the conference leader. I mean, yeah, I don't know what it was. I mean, maybe just what I was saying earlier, like, he's not the flashiest guy out there, but I agree, without him, I mean, Rhode Island, with their complete lack of outside shooting, if they didn't have him holding down the inside game for them, they could have easily been playing tomorrow night on Wednesday.
Yeah, and no offense to Kellen Grady, but I feel like this was a reputation pick. I had him as one of the final guys on my second team. I absolutely believe he's an all-conference player, but I don't think he's a first-team all-conference player. You had him on your third team, so I'm sure you agree with this sentiment. But yeah, he just disappeared in so many big games.
So my reasoning for this, pretty much, I mean, he had a good season, too. Like, don't get me wrong. He was one of the top five in points per game in the conference. He's a great player, obviously. Last year as a freshman, he averaged 18 points, shot 37% from three, 50% overall from the field. He got on the second team, which was very impressive as a freshman. And this year, I mean, his production dropped. He averaged one less point a game. His three-point shooting went down about 5%. His overall field goal percent dropped. He turned the ball over more this year. And pretty much everything else except for rebounding went slightly up. But, I mean, nothing else really improved. So I don't see how he went from second to first team when he wasn't any better to me. I mean, that was the main reason. Like, I still think, obviously, I mean, he's one of the 15 best players in the conference. So that's why I left him on my third team. But I don't know. I mean, I don't see how you can't tell me that he was better than Cyril Langevin this year. I think that was one of the biggest misses that they've had in the selection this year.
If you look around, his stats are virtually the same as Luan Pipkin's, who essentially just got blacklisted. I don't think really anyone considered him for any of these teams, even though his stats were actually probably worthy of it. Now, granted, him deciding to transfer with two games left in the season certainly didn't help his case, but he played in the same amount of games as Grady. His points were about the same. Pipkins had way more assists, and Grady benefited from having the floor always spaced around him with John Axel and Luke Frampton lined up along his wings. I just don't understand this pick.
Yeah, it's gotta be reputation. Just, I mean, I don't know, maybe some of the voters... Well, first of all, I mean, I gotta say, Grady, I don't know if he was the runaway favorite, but an awful lot of people had him winning A-10 Player of the Year before the season started. I don't know, maybe the voters just, they see Davidson at the top of the standings in second place, and they just assume, oh, if Davidson was that good, Grady must have had a huge season. And he was good, but I don't think he was quite at the level of being on the first team.
So here's the weird part of that. I actually discovered today that the voters are just the 14 head coaches. This isn't like the Baseball Hall of Fame years ago, where there's just hundreds of A-10 media members picking this, some of whom literally might not even be watching the games anymore. No, these are the 14 guys that have been watching film on these guys all season. And maybe there's something that we just don't understand. Maybe all season these teams have just been gearing their whole defense around stopping Kellen Grady. And because of that, coaches believe that he still had a worthy season. Maybe they're completely focusing their defense on him, and we don't see that. But to me, this is just baffling.
Yeah, that was the biggest surprise for me too. It was, I don't know. I don't see how you can defend that one, honestly.
The other one that I think there might be a little bit of controversy, I had Courtney Stockard on my team. He made the first team. He didn't have the best last 2 weeks to close out the season, but I actually had him as my player of the year 3 weeks ago. I thought he was a pretty good choice for this. He's the reason that the Bonnies have a double bye. And even though his stats don't quite match up to a few of the other guys in contention, for me, when you're the best player on what is clearly one of the four best teams, I think you deserve to be rewarded.
Yeah, I kind of disagreed with this one. And part of it is he did have a quiet end of the season. I don't think his efficiency numbers quite hold up. I mean, he took a bunch of shots this year. The Bonnies really, they relied on him to carry the load a lot more because they missed their two big-time seniors they had last year, Adams and Mobley. So that's understandable, but he only shot about 29% on three-point attempts, under 50% from two-point range. I don't know. I think he didn't quite hit enough shots. And also, he did miss a lot at the beginning of the season. So just given that he didn't play an entire full season, I felt like that hurt his case just a little bit. Even though, I mean, I weight the conference games more. I do think non-conference should play a small role. So my last pick, I ended up taking Charlie Brown. And I think he probably got hurt a bit because St. Joe's had such a disappointing season. But, I mean, I don't think it was Charlie Brown's fault at all. He was one of the leaders in scoring. He picked up his rebounding as the season went on. For him, a lot of it was the eye test for me. I just thought watching him handle the ball, get to the basket, and also he's a great shooter for someone of his size, I think he might be the best overall offensive player in this conference. I think it's either him or Obi Toppin from Dayton.
So we'll go into the second and third teams. For me, I'm not going to get up in arms because someone made the third team that I thought should have made the second team. For me, these are kind of the same honor. You weren't on the all-conference first team, but you're still an all-conference player. And in the end, that's really what matters. So the second team, Justin Kyer of George Mason, the most improved player. Cyril Langevin of Rhode Island, Jacob Gilliard of Richmond, Charlie Brown of St. Joe's, and Javon Bess of St. Louis, the Defensive Player of the Year. The third team, a pair of Dayton guys, Jalen Crutcher and Josh Cunningham, Richmond's Grant Golden, St. Louis's Hassan French, and VCU's Dariante Jenkins.
So I thought the second team, I had no issues at all with that, other than Langevin should have been on the first team. But the other guys, Kyer, Gilliard, and Javon Bess that we haven't mentioned yet, I had Gilliard and Bess on my own second team, and I had Kyer on my third team, but he was borderline. I could have gone either way. I thought they got it right pretty much for this one. The one that I thought was missing from either team, I had Jeff Dowden all the way on my second team, and he didn't make anything. I realize his assists per game went down this year, and I think a lot of that you just have to realize when your team is the worst three-point shooting team in the entire country, you're not going to get that many assists because that's how it works. You got to put the ball in the basket. But he increased his scoring quite a bit, which was much needed as Rhode Island graduated four seniors. Maybe second team was a little bit too high for him. I mean, I'm a big Jeff Dowden fan. I think he's always been kind of under the radar as one of the best point guards in the conference. But for him not to make either team, I disagreed with that one.
Yeah, so I had Gilliard, Bess, and Brown as the first three picks for my second team. I think they absolutely nailed those. All three of those guys were terrific this year. I had Grant Golden on my second team. He fell to the third team. No big deal there. He was kind of on the border between the two. Pookie Powell on the third team kind of seemed right the whole way. Jalen Crutcher on the third team is something that I put and really believe should happen. I was surprised, though, to see it happen. I just think that Crutcher's gone all season being super underappreciated by even the Dayton fans. But he's the second best player on this team. He's probably the most critical guy. Even though Obi's had a better season, they can survive without him. Every time Jalen Crutcher got hurt in the closing minutes of a game, which was surprisingly a lot, he had a lot of cramping issues this season where he'd pop out for 2 minutes and then come back.
That'll happen but, when you play 39 minutes a game too, though. I mean, he doesn't really get a break.
Yeah, and their offense would just fall apart in those situations. He's absolutely deserving of the third team, but I thought that he was going to get overlooked, so I'm really glad to see that he made it. For me, I'm shocked that Justin Kyer made the second team. And maybe people are still remembering how great he was to start the conference season, but I honestly just don't think he's the best player on his own team. I thought that Otis Livingston had a better close to the season than him. Their stats are fairly similar. Kyer is obviously a much better rebounder, while Livingston's going to get a lot more assists. But I had Otis Livingston on my third team, and I just thought he was more deserving than Kyer. For me, it really matters when it seems like one guy is in control of a team, even if his stats aren't quite as good.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. For me, when it came down to my third team, I wanted to make sure I had somebody from George Mason represented, because even though they finished their season, or they stumbled to the finish line, but they were still fifth place at the end of the year. So I needed to have somebody from their roster on. I just went with Kyer because at the point of the season, in January and beginning of February, when Mason started to really dominate the conference, when they got off to a 7-1 start, that was mostly due to Kyer. I mean, he had just some huge games in there. And I just felt like he was responsible for so many of their wins to kind of build their momentum, turn their season around after a disappointing non-conference. Otis Livingston, I mean, he's been a great four-year player for the Patriots, so I think he could go either way. That was just my main reasoning for going with Kyer in that situation.
So we're recording this kind of late, and I had a big mess up there. Why is Pookie Powell not on these teams? Like, I actually thought he made the third team. I thought he was terrific this year. LaSalle massively overachieved in conference play. And I guess he got kind of dinged for missing some games down the stretch with an injury. I didn't think that was a big enough issue for me to keep him off, but just some of the guys on the third team I was surprised by. Josh Cunningham is a great player and certainly has a great reputation behind him, but I've watched every second of Dayton's conference play, and when you just go six games in February where it feels like you didn't even play in the game, I don't understand how you can be all conference. And the biggest part of this is a guy that they were taking off the court in crunch time pretty frequently. I think he's critical to what they do on offense, and he causes having him and Toppin out there together causes matchup nightmares, but it's tough to justify having a guy out there, a guy on the all-conference team that isn't closing games for you on defense. And then you can go to the flip side. Hassan French is a guy who frequently does not play crunch time for St. Louis because he can't make foul shots. And he's a terrific defender, but I don't think his defense and rebounding is enough to offset the fact that he's pretty much a non-threat scoring the ball.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on French. I don't think he's a good enough offensive player, although his defense is great. For Josh Cunningham, you know, I think a lot of it came down to expectations for him that were set before the season. He was preseason first team in the A-10, and Dayton fans thought he had a chance to win player of the year. And he did go through a rough stretch in conference play where he wasn't even getting a whole lot of minutes, wasn't putting the ball in the basket very much. And it just seemed like he was being taken out of the game. And I think part of that had to do with last year when he had just monster numbers across the board, he was Dayton's by far their best post threat. And this year he had to share with Obi Toppin. So I think that might have cut into his production. Another factor, too, I just think even though his numbers don't jump off the page, by watching Dayton, you can just tell anytime Josh Cunningham gets the ball within about 10 feet of the basket, he pretty much gets immediately double-teamed, and he had to deal with that a bit last year, too, but I think this year is even more severe in some instances. I think he takes so much of the opposing defense's attention, and that ends up opening up Dayton's offense in other ways. Obviously, I mean, if he was a better passer out of the post, that would have been a bigger factor. Maybe he could have had better assist numbers, but I think he makes opposing defenses plan around him so much. So I felt like there was still a spot for him on the third team.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just tough to get over the fact that for a half a month, he was just a non-factor for this team. Although he was getting rebounds at that point. The one thing that I really would have been up in arms about is if he had made the team over Jalen Crutcher. I just think that Crutcher is more important to what Dayton does. But since he got his proper honors, I'm fine with Cunningham making the team. Honestly, I think that there was kind of a drop-off once you got past like the 13th guy. So you could have gone a lot of ways with the final two or three spots on the third team. And that's where we get to Dariante Jenkins. I was very surprised to see him on the team. We both had Marcus Santos Silva as our second VCU guy. The Rams absolutely deserve to have two all-conference players. Depending on how much you value the extra three rebounds a game Santos Silva gives you, you can really make the case that Jenkins has better stats. And I really have no problem with Jenkins getting this second VCU spot. Just a little surprised to see it happen. I thought that voters would have leaned towards Santos Silva.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that one. I, you know, actually something interesting, and I can't really explain all of this, what I'm about to say, but KenPom, you know, we've brought this up a few times during the season. KenPom has an all A-10 conference team. They do it for every conference. They actually have Santos Silva on their first team, which, I mean, his efficiency numbers are very good across the board, so that must be why the advanced metrics love him. I think a big problem for him that the voters took notice of is he only averaged about 22 minutes a game, so his counting stats just weren't quite there. I think Dariante Jenkins, I mean, I put him on my all-fun team, so I'm obviously a fan, I just, if we're going with who was VCU's second best player this year, I would have put Santos Silva second. I might have even gone Isaac Van ahead of Jenkins at that point. I mean, he's a good player, but I think there were a few better options for the third team.
Yeah, and the only other one, we both had Eric Williams Jr. on our third team. This is where it gets to, like I said, I think you can go a lot of ways with the last two spots. I felt like Duquesne should be rewarded for having a pretty good season, finishing as one of the clear-cut seven best teams in the conference. But in the end, this is a guy who was wildly inconsistent. He didn't disappear for stretches in the way that like a Cunningham or a Kyer did, but there were nights where Duquesne just got minimal contributions from him. I would have picked him personally, but I'm not going to sit here and have some crazy fight for him. I think in the end, inconsistency kind of won out, and when you looked at those final spots, you had a whole bunch of Cunninghams and Williams and Jenkins, guys who had some really terrific games but also had some dud games, and so dealer's choice at that point.
Yeah, I mean, Williams was probably my 15th player. He was on the bubble, we'll say. So I'm not too upset he didn't make it. I thought he was Duquesne's most valuable player this year, all in all. His stats didn't really improve on last year, but that's another situation where Duquesne got a lot better this year. They had a lot more options on offense, so just more different guys taking shots. They didn't need him to do quite as much. I mean, it was still a good season for him. He's only a sophomore, so I'm sure we're going to see him as an all-conference player at some point during his career.
So the all-rookie team, four of these guys I don't think anyone's going to take much of an issue with. Duquesne's Sincere Carey, the Rookie of the Year, Dayton's Obi Toppin, and a pair of St. Bonaventure Bonnies, Kyle Lofton and Osun Oshunahi. The one potentially controversial one, Fordham's Nick Honor. I had him on my all-rookie team. You had St. Joe's Jared Bynum. A lot of angry Davidson fans who responded to us when we talked about our rookie team a few weeks ago would have put their own Luke Frampton in that spot. I mean, I think you could have gone anyway with those three. In the end, Honor had a much tougher burden. His shooting percentages are actually pretty much in line with Frampton, despite the much higher volume. And typically when you get in a situation like that, voters are going to go for the guy who has the better counting stats. So I very much support Nick Honor's inclusion on this list.
Yeah, that one, I agree. The first four selections you mentioned, I don't think there's any debate. They all were rightfully placed on the all-rookie team. I went with Bynum just because, I don't know, his efficiency numbers were good. He played a ton of minutes for St. Joe's. I mean, Honor had to carry a heavy burden, but you can say the same about Bynum. He didn't really come out very much at all during conference play. Very impressive stat I actually did not know about, and I didn't confirm this, but I'm assuming that they wouldn't lie to us. The St. Joe's Twitter account tweeted out that Bynum led the Atlantic 10 in an assist-to-turnover ratio, which I think is very impressive for a freshman. And he did. I mean, he played a big role once Lamar Kimball missed some time with a wrist injury. I thought he did a pretty good job filling in as the starting point guard, and at that point they really needed him because they didn't have anyone else to go to off the bench. Honor isn't a bad pick. He probably would have been my sixth pick if there's a sixth man on the all-rookie team, so that's not a huge complaint by me. I personally would have gone with Bynum, though.
All right, so the all-defensive team, Rhode Island's Cyril Langevin, Richmond's Jacob Gilliard, who led the league in steals, St. Bonaventure's Osun Oshunahi, who led the league in blocks, and then a pair of St. Louis Billikens, the defensive player of the year, Javon Bess, and his teammate, Hassan French. And we just got to ask, how did VCU possibly end up with no guys on this team? I almost filled out my ballot with four VCU guys on it, just because their defense has been that terrific. I think that you have a very serious argument that Isaac Van Marcus Santos Silva, Marcus Evans, and Deriante Jenkins all should have been on this team. At the very least, they should have had one. And I just don't know what happened. Maybe the vote got split where no one could figure out who VCU's best defender actually is, and everyone voted for somebody different. But at that point, you go back and just edit the vote. Like, this is insane.
Yeah, I don't understand it. VCU had the best defense we've seen in the Atlantic 10 in some time, I think. I put Marcus Evans on my old defensive team instead of Hassan French, and then the other four selections ended up being the same. But yeah, you could have gone with several VCU players. I'd even add in a Corey Douglas, who blocked a shot and a half per game off the bench. That's very impressive. And you might be right. They might have just split the vote in a way that didn't work out favorably for VCU, because it just doesn't make sense. Their team defense is phenomenal. I mean, they really brought havoc back after a bad season last year. And I personally just went with Evans because I wanted to have a second guard on my all-defensive team other than Jacob Gilliard. But yeah, you could have gone with any of their starters, really. That's puzzling that they had nobody.
Yeah, I had Oshunahi and Bess on my team. Langevin, Gilliard, and French all ended up in what would have been my second team all-defensive team with Marcus Evans and Deriante Jenkins if I had made a second team. I picked Isaac Van as my defensive player of the year. I just thought he was absolutely terrific, and I wanted to reward a guy from the best defense. I also had Jordan Goodwin on here. I think that he was actually more valuable to St. Louis's defense than French was. And then Sincere Carey of Duquesne, who ended up coming in second in steals to Gilliard. He was critical as the pressure point of Duquesne's pressure defense. I mean, once again, this is a really tough thing to evaluate. We don't have great stats for this. So while I personally picked Carey and Goodwin over French, Gilliard, and Langevin, I have no issue with them making the team. I thought all three of them had really good defensive seasons. But man, this whole VCU not having a guy on the all-defensive team is maybe the dumbest thing to come out of the A-10 awards in our lifetime.
Yeah, that's a big mess. Yeah, it's awful. Honestly, I think, you know, I ended up having 4 out of 5 that the real picks ended up being, and then Hassan French I didn't pick, but if I had one more spot, I kept going back and forth between him and Langevin. You know, a lot of it might have come down to just looking at guys that got a bunch of steals and blocked shots, and also rebounds. I mean, I'm not going to lie, that's pretty much what I did. I mean, I also used the eye test, but maybe that's how the coaches also evaluated it, because it can be tough, you know, just based on stats. I mean, you can't measure team defense on an individual basis, as in, like, how much each player contributes to the unit defensively. So I don't know. It's tough to measure, but it really is a shame that there were no VCU players on the list.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to throw a few stats behind this rant. VCU scoring defense, first, 59.4 points a game. Field goal defense, first, 35.5%. Three-point defense, first, 28.5%. They give up less than 100 threes in conference play. 100 threes made. That's absolute insanity. Rebounding defense, second, 32.6 per game. UMass was actually ahead of them on that. Blocked shots, second, 4.4 per game. They were below Duquesne. Steals, first, 7.8 per game. If you had just turned in a ballot in which your all-defensive team was VCU's starting five of Evans, Santos Silva, Jenkins, Van, and Matt Mobley, I would have been perfectly okay with that. I almost did that for my own ballot. Their defense was just so above and beyond everyone else's this year, and this is a true awards travesty.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what else there is to say. That was the most questionable pick we had this year.
So the final award, we have no analysis for this since we're not in the classroom with these guys, but congratulations to the five members of the all-academic team. Dayton's Ryan Meixel, a guy who many friends of ours have been in classes with and said is a extremely studious guy, a guy who really cares about his studies.
Yeah, they can attest. He shows up to class, so good for you, Ryan.
Justin Mazzulla of George Washington, Jeff Doughton of Rhode Island, Noah Yates of Richmond, who graduated from Yale and then made the case that he would be better off furthering his education in Virginia, and Marcus Evans of VCU. So congratulations to those five. Before we wrap it up, we want to revisit some of the preseason picks for these teams. For those who forget, the preseason all-conference first team that comes from the conference was Kellen Grady, Josh Cunningham, Otis Livingston, Luan Pipkins, and Grant Golden. So we were extremely close to not having any of these guys make the first team. And maybe that's what happened. They were just covering for their predictions. They wanted to make sure Grady made it. Second team was Eric Williams Jr., Pookie Powell, Jeff Doughton. Courtney Stockard ended up jumping a team in real life. Javon Bess, who did end up on the second team, and Jordan Goodwin. And then the third team, one of the errors that we were quick to point out in the preseason, they had John Axel Goodmanson on their third team. We both had him on our first team. We're going to take a nice victory lap on that. Lamar Kimball, whose season was messed up by injury. Charlie Brown actually ended up on the second team. And then two guys who did end up on the third team in real life, Hassan French, and I had completely forgot that Dariante Jenkins was preseason all-conference third team, but that's where he ended up in the end. And then the defensive team, Langevin, Gilliard, and Bess, all on the preseason defensive team. They made it in real life. The other two were Goodmanson and Terry Nolan Jr. of George Washington.
You know, I think this can best be summed up, as many things can be, by a John Rothstein quote, which is, "College basketball, where unexpected becomes the ordinary." This just goes to show, before the season, we really don't know what's going to happen. I mean, so much can change with injuries and just guys breaking out. I do think it is really hilarious that Kellen Grady's the only guy that was on the preseason all-first team, and then he ended up making the real one, and we're not very happy about it, but it is what it is. One guy I do want to talk about that I had him on my preseason first team, Luan Pipkins. His stats held up pretty well. He just about was the only player to average a triple nickel in the A-10. Felt a couple of rebounds short at the end. And I just think the fact that UMass was terrible this year and that they actually got better once he got hurt, which not sure exactly what's going on there, but I think that hurt his case a lot. It's tough to put someone that high on the all-conference standing when their team's just awful. But I don't know. I mean, statistically, you could make an argument. I don't really think there was a mistake leaving him off at this point, though, just based on the – it comes down to wins and losses in the end.
Yeah, and he played 24 games, which looking at that number, it seems like a typo. That seems much higher. I think a lot of people, myself included, just thought that he had only played half the conference season. That really wasn't true. Now, granted, this got bumped up by a few games where he played very few minutes as he was rehabbing. But, yeah, the numbers were there. I just don't think the total minutes were there.
And also, I want to mention, today it came out that Pipkins will be missing the rest of the season. He will not play in the A-10 tournament as he's still nursing a hamstring injury. So just wanted to put that news out there. Adjust your A-10 tournament champion picks accordingly. I don't know if anyone's going to need to, unless you're a bigger homer than I am for my team. But that information's out there. It looks like he's done playing in a UMass uniform, as he will be transferring at the end of the season. So I also want to mention, I had a couple dark horses for my all-conference teams before the season. That didn't go very well. I had Trey Landers from Dayton, who he was all right. He ended up losing his starting spot near the end of the year. Rashawn Holloway was okay, but he missed some games with injury, and also just UMass was terrible. And then I had Taylor Funk, who Joe Gennardi described as a catch-and-miss shooter. So, yeah, none of those picks panned out, really. And, yeah, it goes to show, before the season, we really don't know what we're talking about. You gotta wait for some of the games to be played.
Yeah, and we'll see. Maybe we were wrong on some of our analysis of these guys. While this is a regular season award, if Kellen Grady goes off and has a great tournament, he's going to make us look pretty stupid. And so for all the guys that we criticized during this podcast, Honestly, none of them are bad players. We just agreed that someone else deserved to make it more. And all of them are guys who could have just a terrific next week and make us look like fools for doubting them. But one thing I don't doubt, Ciryl Langevin should have been on the first team. I'm not happy about this. And so, Ciryl, we support you. You were robbed on this. And just one other piece of news before we move on. We just found out that Jair Grere of George Mason, a pretty good player, but one who missed most of the season with an injury, he's going to be transferring at the end of the year. So the A-10 transfer train is unfortunately starting to heat up.
You know that now that you're mentioning Grayer, I just got a note. I saw that on a piece of writing by Jeff Goodman, who you all know him. He's not a fan of what we do in the A-10, but he compiled a big list of transfers, and Grayer's name was unfortunately on that list. Today, Jeff Goodman was tweeting out some of the all-conference awards that were being released across the country. And according to him, someone named John Alex Goodmanson won A-10 Player of the Year. So I don't know if he's just trolling us or if someone needs to correct him, but come on, man. Like, it's not funny at this point. They're not going to take away our auto bid. Give us some respect.
Yeah, and if you've never heard of Jeff Goodman, he is the host of his own Pac-12 podcast. It's called One Bid League because that's where they're headed after Washington wins their conference tournament and then loses to VCU in the first round of the NCAAs.
You know, I love that, but I just want to be careful throwing around one bid league jokes because for at least the next few days we have to worry about that happening. You know, I have nothing against VCU. They're really fun to watch. They run a great program. But I mean, I have to admit, I don't really want to see them win in Brooklyn just because, you know, if they do that's it. It's a one bid league. Nobody's getting an at-large from the A-10, so I do think they're safe at this point. We've already gone over that. It would be a real shame if they didn't make it at this point. But hopefully we get two. I mean, if we get multiple bids to the NCAA tournament, you know, we were kind of bold naming ourselves the three bid league, but if we get two, I mean, we can at least say we were close. So I wouldn't be too upset with that.
Yeah, and in the words of David Jablonski, we never classified what it's going to be. The three bids might refer to the NCAA and the NIT combined.
Well, and also you have to note, GW will be heading to the tournament. I'm not going to tell you which GW it was, but somebody with the initials GW just won their conference tournament. They will be playing in the NCAAs. So if you add them in, and then somebody other than VCU wins the A-10, then that's three bids right there. That's the math. I mean, that works out. So don't ask me what that team was. I'll let you know that it is a GW. It might not be the one that you're hoping, though. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, and so with that, we're going to wrap it up on this episode. We will not be back on Wednesday night. I mean, quite honestly, if we did a pod analyzing the GW UMass and Richmond Fordham games, would any of you guys even listen to that? So we will be back Thursday night to break down the second day of games and give a preview of the quarterfinals. And then we'll be with you every day for the rest of the conference tournament. Thank you again for listening to the Three Bid League podcast. Follow us on Twitter at the number Three Bid League Pod. Send us any questions that you want answered over the week. Since we're doing these pods every day, we'll be able to get back to them pretty quickly. And just spread the word and tell a friend if you enjoy the pod. And send us any feedback that you have.